CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Live on a Tuesday, we've got our usual cast and crew for a Tuesday. I'm thrilled to say Pumi Mashiko, Bulelo Tinta, Sia Sangweni, and me. And we're all here just for you. Hopefully to keep you company and make your Tuesday morning bearable in this cold winter. I hope you don't have load shedding first thing in the morning. That would be shocking.
Oi.
Oi is right. Oi, imagine, huh? Like I was telling you about that one friend of mine who does these cold showers in the morning. It's something Bulelo probably does.
Negative.
No, you wouldn't do that, right?
I don't know what value it's got.
Yeah.
I wonder how people like that stomach doing that when I can't even stand brushing my teeth in the morning. Just rinsing my mouth with cold water is a whole...
Yeah, these people, they swear.
Why are you brushing your teeth with cold water?
Don't you turn on a little bit of hot water as well?
Uh-oh.
Like mix it up so it's warm?
I just realize I've grown up with an old wives' tale.
What, that you must brush your teeth with cold water?
That if you rinse and brush with warm or hot water, you'll have smelly breath. Oh my gosh, yep, yeah. No, it's actually... It's the first... Okay, anyway.
Oh, stupid.
I know, this is a silly thing.
Who told you that?
And I only realize it now.
Who's been lying to you, Sia?
I grew up believing this, so sure. This... Probably like
gogo.
Some
gogo. Yeah? It's always the gogos.
Oh, wait, do you guys rinse with warm water?
Yeah. Well, in winter, yeah.
Standard.
Sorry, that's my first revelation of sure. The morning.
Well, okay. That's a good thing. We start the morning with a lesson for everybody.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, including that song.
Oh, you like that song. All right, let me tell you the story about that song. So I was... My aunt lived in Jamaica for a while because my gran was born there and she obviously went to reconnect with her roots, right? And when she was there in the 1980s, in a sort of self-imposed exile, because my aunt was a real, like, lefty, you know, she was massively into the struggle, like she was good friends with a number of politicians and she was actually a godmother to a politician's child. And so she was very much in that movement. And so she goes off to Jamaica almost as a personal protest in one hand and a way to connect with my gran on another. It was after my grandmother died. And while she was there, she sent us a bunch of music. And one of the songs she sent us was on this album by a woman called Carlene Davis, who was quite a famous Jamaican singer. And her song was Winnie Mandela. And it was a protest song. Now, in the song, you could hear, like, the lyric is that Nelson Mandela is still in prison at the time she writes this song. And the one lyric goes, like, in a matter of time, Botha will be gone, because he was still president then. And this is a very, like, you know, in those days in South Africa, you couldn't have songs like that, because the government banned them, you know? So I used to listen to this song, and I thought I was being very rebellious. So I've still got the LP somewhere here, but it was like the Winnie Mandela song. And because, you know, there were lots of things being said about Nelson, but Winnie, this was a Winnie Mandela song. So it was actually a Jamaican song that my aunt sent us.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I
Your
thought
aunt
of it
sounds fascinating.
Yeah, she's pretty out there. I mean, I like my aunt. She's also an architect. She's a very talented, creative person. I mean, you know what? I think that song meant more to me because I knew we weren't actually allowed to have songs like that. And I was thinking about that song yesterday. I started singing it in my head because I've remembered the tune. You know, I used to listen to it a lot. I used to listen to a lot of music when I was a kid. And I thought about it because of Zinzi dying yesterday. So in my head, I was almost singing Zinzi instead of Winnie.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, I didn't know Zinzi well. I won't claim to know her at all. I know some of the members of the family. But I just, you know, it kind of feels like, you know, there are family in South Africa. I don't want to say too much because it sounds twee and people get all upset. And I just people think they own other people, right? And they think they own someone else's stories and legacy, and that person is theirs in some personal sense. And I don't feel like that at all. But I do feel like the Mandela family are kind of like, I'm sure Americans feel this way about the Kennedys, or yeah, maybe the British feel this way about their royal family even. But it's just, you know, we all knew Zinzi because she stood up at that rally at Orlando Stadium all those years ago. And she was this little girl. I mean, you know, she was older than me. But I remember watching the tapes, and she would, you know, say Amandla to this crowd of much older people. And she was this little girl, but she was brave. And she died yesterday, or in the early hours of yesterday. She was in the position of being our ambassador to Denmark, but I believe she died here in South Africa. And I know she took it really hard when her mother died, because they were very close. So her sister Zenani, who's her full sister, you know, they were both the children of Nelson and Winnie, and all the other children of Nelson were by his other wives. But Zenani is our current ambassador to South Korea. And I don't know if she's back in the country for her sister's funeral, or whether she's on her way back, because she obviously was stuck there during COVID as well.
Yeah. So I think the thing about it, though, you know, you mentioned like the Kennedys and the royal families and all of those people. But I think it's the same with people we see every day. It's because these people are in our lives.
Yes.
I've got feedback. Mulelo, can you help?
You got feedback?
I've got an echo. I don't know why.
What are you using to listen to us? No, let's sort it out. Oh, you got AirPods, then? Huh.
We'll work on it.
Thanks.
Okay, we'll do that.
But it is also, these are people. I feel like this with people you see on TV, right? Because they're in your life so much. Even though there's a barrier, there's a screen, there's a microphone on the other side. But they're in your life. You see them every day on your TV or whatever. They're part of the fabric of your life. And that's why.
Yeah, you feel so close to them. Yeah,
and
I get
like
it.
They're in your life.
And it's funny because I've met Zinzi, I think, twice. So I don't know her at all. And all the other times it was seeing her on TV and, you know, and in interviews and that kind of thing. But anyway, I mean, I just feel like, you know, maybe Pumi's right. It's just because these people are in our consciousness that we are aware. And
yeah.
And I just think that family in particular means a lot to this country.
It's a little eerie that
we know how much Winnie meant to South Africa. We know how much Nelson Mandela meant to South Africa. So it's kind of like now the children of the struggle are dying. So it's a generation that's passing on.
It's a little eerie that she passed away on the 13th of July, which everyone has been picking up on, was the day Nelson Mandela's oldest son also passed away back in 1969.
Hmm. Really? Okay, that's...
In a car accident.
Mm.
I thought that was a bit weird that the foundation would tweet that little piece of information.
While they knew that she was in hospital and also... I think maybe it was a little oversight. I'm sure they always schedule all of these social media posts based on the history of the day, and they were still just dealing with the news or the developing story, as opposed to the Honorable Bantu Holomisa.
Oh, shame. Did anyone see Bantu Holomisa? There was a clip going around. Sia sent it to me.
I shame, guys.
He was on with Jane Dutton. Oy, oy, oy.
I actually had a moment of thinking that thing is a deep fake. I really did, because I couldn't understand why he would take the call. He sounded like he had just been woken up from sleep.
And grumpy, you know, when you're cranky because you've just been woken up.
So explain what happened.
That's what he sounded like.
I'm not going to play it because the audio is not great, but Jane Dutton on ENCA says to him, so this is very, very sad. And Zinzi Mandela has passed away. And he goes, yes, so many people are dying of COVID. So then she goes, so are you confirming that Zinzi died of COVID? So he's like, no, I didn't say
you
that.
You just told me that. No, he said, but I just heard it from you now.
And she's like, no, I was hoping you would confirm it. He's like, no, I didn't confirm it. So then she says to him, well, can you comment maybe on the relationship that Zinzi had with her mother? And he goes, no, I've got the wrong person.
What do you mean we've got the wrong person, yeah, Mr. Hulumiza?
As he puts down the phone or something, he was grumpy. He's also, maybe he's addled as well. You know, he's not exactly a spring chicken anymore.
Maybe he was at Tabo's house and they were having a 21 year.
Le lo pinda.
Tabo's house.
Four bottles down and it's not even 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yo, when you are getting your membership card and your parking spot at Luthuli House revoked soon.
Listen, as a Xhosa man, today I'm identifying as Xhosa. If there's one thing they do, it's great.
But now during lockdown, you think Tabo's got supplies?
Oh, he stocked up. I mean, he had inside lane. Yeah, that Shivers Regal truck, one way. One way, Asdali, no, whoa. He would rather you change that airport in Johannesburg's name before he didn't have his 21 year.
And how do you know this exactly?
Everybody knows he gets the shakes.
Everybody knows.
He needs to stabilize.
Everybody,
I shall not let you speak about Mr. I am an African like this.
Pumi's not disagreeing, Sia. It's only you. You know why? Because Sia has this idealistic nature.
That's what I am.
You gobsmacked by?
By Mbulelo.
Why? So much disrespect.
It's not even the disrespect. It's the authority with which he speaks of these things.
Wow.
I mean.
It's kind of out there, though.
Come on.
Shame on you.
Come on, guys. Yeah.
I'd like to be hopeful with everyone. I believe in everyone's good.
Okay. Well, you carry on doing that. You'll keep us honest.
Let's talk about him building a library and whatnot.
All right, we can do that. Okay, lots of stuff to talk about this morning, but first let's just check what's on everyone's agenda. Mbulelo, how's Cliff Central Sport coming along? I'm hearing good things. In fact, Ben sent me a message the other day to say, wow, this show that Bulelo's got going is really impressive. So you've had some great guests, huh?
We have had some great guests, including Ben himself, which was very, very cool. I mean, he's great. But tomorrow we've got probably our most high-profile guest, one of the leading golfers in the world, Lee Westwood, which is a huge. Impressive. That's a very, very, very big thing for us. So we're really looking forward to that. It's going to be awesome. We've got a great week coming up. So go and subscribe, YouTube, Cliff Central Sports.
Yes, go and take a look, because Bulelo's not doing this for his health. He's gathering an audience. It's gathering momentum, and you can be a part of that. Be an early adopter, as they call it. So one day when the show is world famous, then you could say I was there at the beginning.
Are you a Lee Westwood fan, Bulelo?
I am.
I always saw you as like a soccer guy, but obviously there's more to you.
I'm a sports guy. Yeah. So I actually have a horror story to tell about golf itself. My dad once offered me R1,000 because we lived on a golf estate when I was younger, but I was like really, really young. And he offered me R1,000 to carry a golf bag around the course.
Sure.
I left it at the ninth and I went home and never again have I ever stepped on a golf course. So I've got a bit of trauma around golf itself, but I love watching.
Not only did you not get R1,000, but you got a dressing down.
A beating. Oh. No, not just dressing down, a beating.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So I left R1,000 on the table, which my father could not believe. And then I got a beating for leaving it there.
Well, why though?
Oh, it's so heavy. I was 11. It's so heavy. The bag's so heavy. No. I was done. At nine, I left it there. They knew him.
This is a good example of the stick and the carrot argument. Yeah. Sometimes you get both. The carrot is R1,000 that he was offered, which was a good incentive. And then the stick came because he didn't take the carrot.
I never thought of it like that.
Listen,
but I do love watching golf. Yeah.
That's how it always works. If you don't take the carrot, the stick comes.
I want to ask you guys about what you think. I've spoken to Sia about this a little bit, but I want to speak to you, Pumi and Bulelo, and take the messages to 0797482090. See what you think about this booze ban, because I've heard some interesting insights from people I didn't expect about, you know, I've got a couple of friends who are doctors, and one of them has said makes no difference because those trauma cases are going to come in anyway, whether you ban booze or not. The other one said, no, it's definitely helping because people can't behave. And as a doctor, he's tired of seeing unnecessary injuries.
People can't behave. I love that.
That's what he said. Basically, people in this country can't behave. So he's happy to see this ban on booze come back, which means that I've got two doctors who have exactly the opposite point of view on this. And there are members of society who are saying, you know what? I mean, even Leanne Moll yesterday, who's a big alcohol advocate, she was saying that she thinks that this is a good thing because she feels
which was very surprising.
Very surprising. I thought she'd be furious yesterday, but she wasn't. She was very calm and cool and collected. She she did make the caveat that she may at some point change her mind and feel like backtracking on her statement. But I wondered what you two thought.
So I think that the ban is a good thing because people can't behave, really, because people can't behave. We've seen the videos, right, of all the people having parties, all the people having the after tears, all of that. I do, however, wish we'd been given, like, forewarning. Like, if it said, it'll be banned in 48 hours. Give us a chance to like stock up a little bit for the responsible people, because some people are responsible. Some people are drinking at home. Some people hadn't, you know, it was Sunday night. People had like had their, what did you say, Bulelo? Their bottles of Shivers.
Stabilizer.
Over the weekend, they like clapped it. Although, and I do think that alcohol in this country, Africa Check has been running a thing. You know what Africa Check is, yeah, right? You can send them a question and see, is this true kind of
fact
thing.
Checker.
So they've been running a thing about South Africa's alcohol intake and how problematic is alcohol really. You know my feeling about this is I think South Africans as a whole are highly traumatized. And because of that, alcohol and substance abuse is one of our biggest like
coping mechanisms.
Stabilizers.
Yeah.
And I think that the ban is probably a good thing because I do think that we are now almost in the eye of the storm. And we've always known that when the storm breaks here, it's gonna be a terrible thing to behold. And I think everybody gets it now. Like social media has moved away from it being just numbers that Zweling Kiza is sending out at 9 p.m. It's now people, actually, there are names to the numbers. And the numbers, we spoke about this last week, it's getting closer and closer. So each of us now probably has one or two people that we know personally who have succumbed or are ill. Or, you know, and the booze just makes us a little like lackadaisical about our behavior.
What do you think, Bulela?
You know what? I'm so sensitive to the alcohol thing because I know it from two realities, and I've lived out the other one. Is that when I look back to both of my families are rural, sort of born and bred, most of our families on both sides, is I've seen what alcohol does to that sector of my family. And I don't know what people's realities are. I'm just telling you why I'm sensitive to it. And I've seen how it ravages those communities, right? Absolutely ravages them. And so when I was younger, you might call me a little rambunctious. So I used to like a toot or two at some, what people are calling tabo mbegi levels. And so I could recover, right?
Wow.
I had a little bit of room to come back, you know, he was just getting to know himself. But I see what it's doing to the fabric of the society that is my family and those around them in rural areas. And I've never lived in a township, so I don't want to speak on that. I'm really sensitive to alcohol, and I think it needs to be curbed in whatever way we can. I'm not a professor. So for me, I think we need to find a creative way to not center our economy around around alcohol, and I don't know if we can do it. Mm. So I'm probably not a good person to ask, because I'm just so sensitive to it. It's affected me personally in my 20s, and then I've seen it ravages most of my family, and let's face it, most Black people are poor in this country, and I've seen what it does in rural areas. So I'm sensitive to it. I am sensitive to it, and I think I wish we could find an alternative, number one, to base our economy around, number two, as an outlet, because this is no good. And the people who drink is, you know, people speak about responsibility. You're not the victim, for me, is the problem. Is the person who gets drunk and crashes into people and stabs someone, you're not the victim. This notion that, oh, I'm responsible, I'm drunk or whatever, you're not the victim. Everyone around you is. And, you know, when you don't have resources and generally financial, is there's no safety net for you in these tragic circumstances. So I don't know. I'm really sensitive to it, Gareth. I don't know. For me, booze ban, great. But, you know, people will argue for the economy.
At the beginning of the year, remember we had Jonathan come on the show to tell us about the 16th of December and kind of the 31st of December, yeah, and how crazy
exactly
the casualties get. Crazy. I'm still a little traumatized from just that particular conversation. Uh-huh. But the stories he was telling us, and we know, so Bulelo, I do come from a township. Dude, those, like the December holidays, the weekends, and it's indicative of the bigger problem that we have in our society. There is, we keep talking about, on a very theoretical level, very cerebral level, that we have a ticking time bomb with so many young people not working. But what a lot of people don't see or know or understand is that the ticking time bomb is more about the death, you know, so the hopelessness that people live with. And so the drinking is not even just a weekend experience. The drinking is from 10 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm, in some places, all day, every day.
And
then it progresses, right? So the alcohol is like a gateway, because then it's not enough. It's not enough to numb the pain. It's not enough to take the edge. So you need more and more and more. And this is why we now have a big nyaube problem,
yeah,
because the alcohol is not enough. So you need something else.
So this friend of mine, he dropped his domestic worker yesterday at the taxi rank. And he was telling me on the way they had a conversation. And she thinks the alcohol ban is a good thing. And he asked her why. And she explained that a lot of the men who are sitting at home at the moment who are unemployed are getting aggravated with their wives who are asking them to fix this or get that or do this, and they're not used to it, right? And then if there's no alcohol, they'll mostly keep calm or go to sleep or do their thing. But if there's alcohol, sometimes they will get violent. I mean, this is what she was saying, straight up. So she's not mincing her words. And if we can all do something to curb that, then I think that's probably a good idea. Although I agree with Pumi, and I don't like the idea that we're being ruled by an authoritarian dictatorship at the moment in this National Coronavirus Command Council. And that, you know, either you believe that people are smart and that they have the ability to vote and the ability to make rules for themselves by a democratic process, or you don't. So you either take the view that people are capable or they're incapable of governing themselves. If they are capable, then you have to trust the process with all of its warts and ugliness and blisters and imperfections. And that means that some of the time, if you choose freedom, for example, over order, that's the decision that you make. If most of the people prefer freedom to order and to discipline and to societal rules, then that's how you're going to live, and everyone must make their own decisions accordingly. But if you decide to live in an authoritarian situation where you're told what to do by a paternalistic state, then you can make decisions, if you're in the machinery of that state, for everybody, and they must just fit in or fuck off, basically. And this is the constant challenge of democracy, right? Is that you need to figure out whether you are making rules for people or you're just creating the space for people to make their own rules.
But at the infancy of democracy itself, we need to be careful where we're starting this conversation, is that the citizen must be considered incapable before they get to vote, not capable. It shouldn't be presumed that we're capable, but we kind of live in this, just because you vote, you're capable of voting, your vote should be equal. We must be very clear, at the dawn of democracy, Socrates and the likes, and those just before him, said that you should be presumed incapable until you've proven yourself worthy of being a part of democracy, not this position we take today. It's like, you can vote, so you should have a voice.
So many people are going to find themselves unable to vote, and then we end up in the same situation we were in during apartheid.
No, well, look, if
not necessarily on racial lines, but along different lines. Maybe it's because you're connected to, you know, the elite, or maybe it's because you are wealthy, or maybe it's because you're educated. There are a whole lot of different standards that creep in, and when you get a qualified franchise, you're looking for difficulty here, because then there's going to be reason for everyone in the underclass to revolt.
I agree. So this is the authoritarianism is actually in the fact that we aren't educating our people to a high standard. That's where it starts, because when you educate a society, then they understand their democratic rights, and then they're voting with an educated mind, and then they're weaponized, right? That's why you can't put this nonsense doesn't exist in Finland. Because, the citizenry, largely, not all of them,
but just hop over the border from Finland to Russia. Okay,
let's hear it.
So in Russia, those people have as big a drinking problem as we have, if not worse.
Sure.
And many people in Russia are also uneducated. You have people who live in the Siberian hinterland.
Yeah.
And Russia's history is this patchwork of disasters as well. And just... really, the average Russian's life is just horrible and has always through history been horrible and has very minimally improved during the last 100 years, maybe. Right? And then it's been through ups and downs there as well.
But, and now for the next 26 years, they have Putin.
Exactly. For 100 years, Pumi, as long as he lives. So sure. These are people who also make their own booze if you take their booze away from them, as they proved in the 1980s under Gorbachev. And I don't know whether you could classify Russia as a democracy. Probably not. I don't know if they would classify us as a democracy. Probably not. And their people have as bad a relationship with alcohol as we do.
Absolutely. I can confirm that.
And there it's not an obvious, you know, rich and poor or black and white or old and young situation.
So the Russians might argue this, and I've had plenty of conversations, of course, and I still have friends there, is that there is a freedom in knowing that you are not free. In the West, we presume we are free, right?
Wait,
we presume
what? There's a freedom
in knowing your limits.
Okay.
Like you, in China and Russia, you know your limits. There's the roof. I can see it. I can touch it. Here in the West, we kind of feel free. Yeah, I can marry who I want. I can date who I want. I can travel where I want. But then you look at things like, I can't control the quality of the water I drink, but I can't see who's doing that. So there's sort of more insidious things happening.
Don't say that about Russia and China, though, because they don't even get that part right.
Well, I'm just telling you what comes out of Russia.
If you drink from the Yangtze River, you're dead. If you drink from Lake Karachay in Russia, you're dead. Dead.
And okay, well, let's end off on this. You are dead.
But arguing some Russians, against yourself here, I have to say.
Listen, the Russians will tell you this, is Russia needs a leader like Putin. Now, I'm not going to speak for, is that applicable in South Africa? People in Russia will tell you, that's our guy. And Russians can't bear.
But Boris Yeltsin would never have made rules about alcohol. Boris Yeltsin was their Thabo Mbeki, but only worse.
Mr. Boris.
Jeez, how much worse.
Yes,
all right, we're all over the place.
Boris was a serious drinker. All right, listen, we've got to move on. There are lots of comments about this, which we'll get to in a moment. But first, the five things you need to know, because we've got headlines now. Alcohol ban and taxi capacity. Government is going about it wrong, say the experts. So two medical experts have expressed concern following government's renewed ban on alcohol. Let's just bear in mind, you know, newspapers write this like that's a consensus. They spoke to two medical experts. Speaking to News 24, Angelique Kutsia, who's a doctor, the president of the South African Medical Association and member of the MAC, said the ban on alcohol would impact workers' livelihoods and a better plan needed to be created. Now, here's something a little nuanced, which I'm pleased about from News 24. She added it seemed South Africans had a major issue with alcohol, which had contributed to an increase in casualty cases in hospitals. While the ban might be needed, she said the government could look at measures that were less harsh. You're willing to risk 100% loading of a taxi, but you're not willing to risk coming up with a better solution than just shutting down all the alcohol outlets. She suggested other measures, including limiting outlet times, but more importantly, looking at the cause of why people abused alcohol. She said that needed to be addressed because the moment they lift the ban, it's going to happen again. She's correct. Anybody disagree?
But that's a big issue. That's beyond COVID. It's not a COVID issue. It's an issue for as long as we're here and we don't fix it. It's in perpetuity. We have that issue because it's as we also see the reports, all the stuff around the gender-based violence is now flared up again. Everybody's talking about it. It's back on everybody's frontal lobe. Alcohol, right? It is, whether it's the murder rate, the high, suicide, all of South Africa, what did you say? Societal fabric.
Yeah.
The tape in our societal fabric. And there are lots of different places. It's not just COVID. Mm. It's a problem we have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. But there seems to be no real desire on government's part to deal with any of the cause instead of the symptoms here. There's another doctor, Professor Francois Venter, who's the head of Isintsha Health at the University of Witwatersrand and member of the MAC, said there are more creative ways to relieve some pressure on the healthcare system other than alcohol ban. So these are two important doctors, not just two random off-the-street doctors like the ones I was talking to. He said, while an argument could be made to ban alcohol in hard-hit provinces like Gauteng, there is no reason the ban should apply in areas which did not have high COVID-19 infections, as healthcare systems in these areas were under less stress. Venter added he believed measures were announced as a distraction from the measures we should be talking about, like physical distancing, hand-washing, and mask-wearing. But I think we are talking about that too, though, to be fair. So those are two doctors that have some interesting insights there. Otherwise, people are talking about Aunt Zinzi Mandela. Mandla Mandela feels a gaping chasm of pain over the sudden death of Zinzi. She died on Monday. Her nephew paid tribute to her in an Instagram post. He recalled her inspiring 1985 speech in Soweto when she read her father's rejection letter to then-President P.W. Botha's offer of release on the condition that he renounced violence. Zinzi Swa, who was also known as Zinzi, was the South African ambassador to Denmark. And lots of other tributes are rolling in as well for Zinzi Mandela. Also in the news, a suspect was arrested 6 months after allegedly setting his girlfriend on fire. Yes, you heard those. I didn't make a mistake there. Listen to this. Police on Sunday arrested a 35-year-old man who was in hiding for 6 months after trying to murder his girlfriend by douting her in paraffin and setting her alight. According to police, the suspect had a heated argument with his 19-year-old girlfriend in Witbank in Mpumalanga. He then poured paraffin on her while she was asleep. When she woke up to the smell of paraffin, the suspect set her alight and locked her in the rented room. The victim screamed out of anguish, begging for the suspect to open the door. He didn't. When the other tenants heard the victim screaming and saw she was badly burned, they immediately contacted police and medical personnel for assistance. When they arrived, the medical personnel took her to hospital while police opened a case of attempted murder. He fled Witbank after that. Over 6 months later, they've tracked him down near Bushbuck Ridge, where he had been hiding. He is going to appear in court today. What a story.
That is wild. I was born in Witbank. I'm glad I got out of there before that guy.
What a place, huh?
Mbulela.
Wow. What an unbelievably shitty story, really. This woman is no doubt burned. She's going to bear those scars for the rest of her life. She's lucky to have survived. And this guy, this is what he thought was the way to deal with an argument or a breakup or whatever it was that the two of them were going through. And she was 19 and he was 35. So lots of questions, lots of questions. That's that societal fabric we were talking about, right?
And the fact that he waited until she fell asleep, like talk about premeditated.
Yeah.
Waited until she fell asleep.
And talk about cowardly, by the way.
Bought the paraffin, kept it there,
yeah.
Waited for her to fall asleep.
It's maniacal.
Like, bloody hell. Mm. Bloody hell.
California has reimposed restrictions on businesses and public spaces amid a spike of coronavirus infections. Governor Gavin Newsom on Monday ordered an immediate halt to all indoor activities at restaurants, bars, entertainment venues, zoos, and museums. California has the highest infection rate in America at the moment. And
yay.
I think, yay.
Yay. It was ridiculous.
Oh, not a yay.
Oh,
you're unhappy.
Oh, really? What's going on? No,
it sounded like...
Lord. They had like, and I know they have a huge population as compared to us, but a number like 20,000 over in new infections over 24 hours is a little bit like, what?
Yeah, no, it went out of control there. And California has 330,000 COVID-19 cases, more than 7,000 deaths. The reimposition of the restrictions in the state with nearly 40 million people was prompted by a 20% rise in people testing positive in the past 2 weeks. And, you know, a lot of people are talking about like Florida and Texas, but really Florida and Texas have handled it a lot better than California and New York. New York is still by far the highest death rate in America. And that was because Governor Cuomo, who everybody thought was doing such a good job, and for a while they were punting him to be the Democratic presidential candidate, he sent all those old people back to the old age homes. Right at the start of the outbreak, he said, no, it's fine, go back to the old age homes. And now all those people are gone, so obviously their infection rate is dipping in New York, but that's because they've already killed all their old people.
Unpopular opinion, though, and a total sidebar. Ooh, those Cuomo brothers. Ooh-hoo-hoo.
You like them, Sia?
Distinguished middle-aged men.
Do you love that experience? Do you love that experience of seeing them like high-fiving each other? High-fiving each other during interviews.
I don't know what the Cuomo parents did, but look, I watched a press conference of Governor Cuomo the other day, and he was warning us, he was telling us about, you know, this is, what did he call it? It's not a necktie. It's a mask. It goes over you. I'm like, okay, yes, sir, I'll listen to you.
Wow, all right, Sia. Sia's got definite interest there. All right, Brexit.
Thank you, that's all.
Brexit has moved back to the front burner of British politics on Monday, months after COVID-19 knocked it out of the headlines, with the government launching a new public information campaign to prepare for departure. It is going ahead. Adverts under the UK's New Start, Let's Get Going campaign will warn British tourists to get health insurance before traveling to the continent and offer advice on how to take pets abroad. Britons will be warned to check the roaming policy of their telephone provider. So all of this information is now starting to hit the realm of reality. And we will see what happens there. Home Secretary Priti Patel announced details on how the UK's new points-based immigration system will operate when it goes into effect too. So that's what they're going to do. And this is going ahead as per the will of the majority of the British people. So, you know, whether we agree or disagree, it's not our vote.
Good for them. Well, not good for Mallorca and those types of places.
Exactly.
Oh, they love a bit of Mallorca and Marbella. Not good for those places.
So those are the headlines. Those are the major things you need to know. Now, I want to know, this is Pumi's opinion, and she must now explain herself, because she is completely unimpressed with people who oversell themselves at the job interview, like Kanye West, for example. What do you mean? You know it.
You've had that experience.
You don't think he'd be at work. The most fantastic president?
You're dealing with somebody, and it's you know, it's small things and it's big things. I'm just like, look, President Ye would be something, right? But can he get the job done? Because I deal with a lot of people in my day to day, and I've had instances of going, how did you get this job? Like, yeah. Did you, how good were you at the interview?
Yeah.
And now you're in, because he's there, right? He's like saying all the stuff that people want to hear. I have a view about Kanye and the fact that he's there to split the vote in favor of his favorite president ever.
Oh.
But people who oversell themselves. And then you're like, how did you get this job? How did you do it? Because you know nothing about what it is that you're supposed to do. People have had this experience. I am not the only one.
So is your problem with the employer or the overseller? Because there's two people in this whole debacle.
And surely the employer, if they buy this stuff hook, line, and sinker, they deserve
it. Now you've bought it, you're right. Now you're here, this person is here, you're all in an awkward situation. But this guy knew going in that he knew. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just really great at the interview. And you're just like, oh, buddy, now we're all stuck with you and your incompetent ways.
I find it somewhat admirable if I'm not involved in it. From afar, good going. You swindled them.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what you're going to do when...
I think if you can pull the wool over people's... if you can pull the wool over people's eyes, then, you know... You did your bit. If they're stupid enough to be fooled into that, then that's their problem.
Damien Hirst says the greatest art of today is marketing. So, you know, he sold a shark into formaldehyde for £50 million.
That's right. I mean, that guy, he's a charlatan, but people are buying it.
Something else.
I mean, the art world is one really extraordinary example of exactly this. So I'm going to take Damien Hirst at his word.
Spumi, have you ever had to deal with someone who you could completely see through was just trying to oversell them?
I'm sure she's seen many, right, Pums?
Many. Way too many for my lifetime. Way too many for my lifetime. And it's in that moment where you're having to go. So at this point, and it's always, for me, I also wonder about people who kind of, and people, surely, people must send us messages. I cannot be the only one. You all sound like you've never had to deal with this. Really, have you never worked with somebody and you're just going, you don't know what you're talking about, do you? You've never done this before.
Yeah.
You're just winging it here.
I've met people like that. No, I've definitely met people like that.
Well, it clearly happens more often than not. Because remember a couple of months ago, I think they were trying to all get us into line when the government announced that you could now face some sort of charge for lying on your CV. Even just people misrepresenting themselves.
You mean like those government
CVs,
people who lied on their CVs? We've got famous examples of those, right?
You know who Pumi should train is, I've got a few friends who can't stop whinging about not being able to find a good boyfriend, blah, blah, blah. I think they could do with some Pumi training of how to spot the BS, you know, because I'm tired of listening to it. I don't care that you can't spot a dickhead.
Overselling yourself.
Yeah, no, you need to train these my friends who, because they come and whinge to me. What must I do now? Because you can't pick a good guy. Well, what must I do? I'm busy. I'm trying to get a six pack.
Oh, my God. No, listen, I like to think that I haven't had the wool pulled over my eyes. I like to think that when I meet people, I'm a pretty good judge of what their abilities might be, what their personality is like. But actually, I have no idea. I'm not gonna oversell myself in this respect, because there are some people who are genuinely good at this. I think Pumi's good at it. I think my business partner, Rina, she's good at it. I don't know that I'm as good. I tend to take people at face value, and sometimes I'm disappointed. Mm. You know.
Also, some people are really great at interviews. Some people are really great at job interviews. Right. You know, they like... Swatch for it. You know those people. Mm-hmm. You're just like, what? You have a new job again? You were there at the last job for 6 months.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. When you put it like that, yes. 100%.
When you think people like that, what do you think is the problem? Why are they at a new job every 6 months? Because they oversell themselves at the interview. They get the job. And then when they're on the inside, people are just like, Wait 1 damn minute.
This is such a great point. You know, somebody said to me, if you get divorced once, fine. She was crazy, blah, blah, blah. You get divorced twice. Okay, it was unlucky. It didn't work out. You get divorced the third time. That's a you problem. So to Pumi's point, I think you've got a great point. People need to check. You know, Gareth, you take people at face value. You spoke about Rena just now, who's like a human lie detector, you know.
Yeah.
You do need those people to kind of filter you out and processes. Like, why don't people vet people? Like, do people feel bad for vetting people?
No. People get vetted.
Yeah.
I'm telling you now. You know, so look, I think that there's the vetting, those are the easy things. You know, you just got to like not have a criminal record, you know, have good sure. credit.
Yeah.
That's the vetting process. What the vetting process ain't doing is it's not asking you, have you ever seen a marketing plan? Do you know what goes into production?
Yeah.
That's not what the vetting process is. You're just like, oh, I've worked at these six companies and I was this. I was the marketing manager. I was the brand manager. I was this, this. And now here you are, like, trying to pull off a 360-degree campaign and you don't know how to work out the media plan. All I'm saying, you oversold your damn self.
You know what I love? I love that when we first started talking about this, I was thinking, no, people don't do this. And more, the more examples you raise, the more names people pop up in my head.
Exactly.
Going, all right. Because it's so easy to sit on the Googler Schmoogler, find all of the good buzzwords and phrases to use. And
but also,
to throw them
Pumi, Pumi brings up something I think that is true, especially in the marketing world, because marketing is one of those places you can get away with bullshit. You know, you can't, if you're an accountant, it's much harder to do that.
Mm.
You know,
yes.
I'm sure the people at Deloitte and KPMG have got stories to tell.
Yeah, but you know what it's like, Pumi. In marketing, it's really all about presentation, and a lot of it is smoke and mirrors. And that's where I'm always suspicious of people. Because in marketing, you know, people make stuff up, and they say they were brand manager for this, and they leverage essentially the value of that brand into their own CV rather than the other way around. They don't go, I was the guy who launched X campaign or Y campaign. Because you would know them then.
Mm-hmm.
The people who make their name by making great brands, those are the great marketing people. But there are few of those, very few, few and far between. The ones who claim, oh, I worked with this brand, I worked with that brand, but you've never heard of them, they were really just riding on the brand. The other way around.
Oy.
You know what I mean?
I got
point.
Yeah.
Dude. There's sales and marketing. I'm sorry, sales and marketing is full of that kind of nonsense.
Bullshit,
right?
Yeah.
PR.
Oh, yeah.
PR, definitely. Definitely.
Yes.
You know, the bars are relatively set so low that if you just come in dressed well, oh my gosh, can tell me that you've made someone trend once. Like, oh, great.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
No case studies necessary, nothing.
It's also because a lot of people like to think themselves creative.
Mm.
They're like, I'm a creative person. So a lot of people also like to do the lift shift, right? So maybe you studied a BCom, but you actually think you're more of a marketer, you're more of a creative type person, right?
So, yeah. Listen to this quickly. I just want to turn our attention to something completely different.
So true, Venetia
just sent me this message. She said, I'm not able to listen to you guys live this morning. The rain and wind is too loud and hectic in Cape Town. Keep with storms at its best. Stay safe. Not even headphones are helping for Venetia to listen to us. That's how crazy the weather is in Cape Town right now. I don't know if you saw those videos of like the foam coming off the sea and Jesus. Here's
the pictures of Sea Point basically looking like cappuccino.
Yeah, exactly. Tabiso says, you think that's bad? Imagine getting in a new job and wondering how the hell your supervisor or manager got into the company in the first place, let alone a position of power. Story of my life.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Your boss is useless. And that happens a lot. Fatisa says, yo, Pumi, my previous PA was so good in the interview, I wanted to hire her on the spot. Fast forward a few months, she'd never planned a trip overseas. I could overlook that. Then she took out a cell phone contract using my name without knowing it. And when I finally let her go, she didn't bring back the company laptop.
No.
The horror, the horror, the horror, says Fatiswa. Yeah.
The scandal.
And then a good point being made here by Darren. He says, a lot of this can be described with the Dunning-Kruger effect. A lot of these people don't know that they're incompetent.
Some people believe their own hype too much.
They don't know they're incompetent. Now there is something.
The Dunning-Kruger effect is real.
Tato says, he's just sent me a screenshot of his order from Takealot.
Mm-hmm.
He ordered some Martell VS single distillery 750 mils and some chocolate block wine. And he says he's still waiting for his order. And he placed the order on the 9th of July. So I don't know if that's going to come, dude.
Well, yeah, because when you look at the wording of what the prison says and what the Gazette also states, it's the sale and distribution of alcohol. So even if you've bought it on the 9th, as Tato says,
they can't deliver
the distribution is also banned.
Here's what's going to happen.
Although it serves you right, Tato. You could have just gone to the bottle store. Why would you wait a week?
He's staying home and staying safe.
Yeah, stay safe, stay home. So the government, here's an interesting point being made. Oh, come on. By Donnie. Donnie says, why don't the government just increase the tariffs on booze during this time? If you triple tariffs, then those who can consume would reconsider. They can decide for themselves.
No, that's not true, because people know that eating Doritos for breakfast makes you fat. We continue to do that. Oh. So that's absolutely not true. What are you saying?
People will sell their mother's pots so they can buy like a half a finger of duck.
There it is. That's
wow. Is that what it's called? Is it a finger of duck?
I have no idea.
That is the scientific measurement.
Yeah, I just want to know so that next time I go I get a whole hand of tick.
Can you afford a palm?
I
don't know. Cocaine.
Jesus.
Oh, geez.
I didn't know about this with tick.
Okay,
so Carol says, to be fair, guys, taxis are also pretty hard hit. They've been told they can have 100% capacity. That's down from 200%. <All right. laughs> Nice, Carol. Carol's on the money. All right, it is 7 o'clock. CliffCentral.com. We will take your calls and hear what you have to say this morning. 0797482090. You can send us a voice note. You can send us a message like those ones I just read out now. Let us know what you're up to. Pumi's here, Bulelo, Sia, and I ready to hear from you and to give you some stuff to think about this morning. All of that and more on the way. CliffCentral.com.